Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the control operator for the Linemark Technical Net. It's been going strong for 45 years now, and every Sunday night we sit in front of our radio, and we chat with each other, and we teach each other, and we learn from each other, and hopefully we're entertained by each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we're going to try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. If you would like to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to contact Paul and tell him about his space or a NASA-related story and ask him to take a look at it and give his opinion, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer a link page throughout the week. I cut and paste interesting articles that I've read, and I publish the links to all of them once a week, and they stay on the page for the foreseeable future. If you want to take a look at them, access them, you just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring up the link pages. We don't have a chat room. I don't know what the hell happened to Chatsy, but they locked it down, and there's no email address, so I'm going to have to look for another chat room, perhaps. Anyway, moving on, we offer an audio stream of the Technical Net, and I keep it live the rest of the week, so if you don't have a radio and you'd like to know what's going on in the Glen Oaks repeater, you just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you an audio stream of the Linemark repeater. Also, Mike, AC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Linemark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have either moved away from the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys. Check it out. Good story. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned tonight. Okay, I have some updates on AI news. It's always going to be in the news for our foreseeable future. And a short discussion on a topic that we covered a month or two ago, where there's some additional interesting news, so I'll share it with you. So that's the plan. I will then go to the main segment, which is questions and such, and ask people to hit their push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology. Preferably, let's keep the amateur radio stuff up front at the beginning, and later on, we can always talk about any kind of science and technology that interests you. I'm game if you're game. That's the plan. I would suggest that if you have a multi-part a question or a long presentation, you leave it towards the end of the list, because most people who just have one short question, they really kind of get annoyed when they sit there for an hour and a half. So if you got a 2-minute question, try and do it up front at the beginning. If you got an hour and a half presentation, try and do it at the very end of the list. So that would be my recommendation. That should theoretically take us approximately to 10:15. Where Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return at that time to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If it continues to work, my computers continue to work, and the radio continues to work, and the repeater continues to work, and I continue to work, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times, because it's almost inevitable that at some point in the next 3-odd hours I'll be tossed from All-Star. Recover without too much delay, but If you notice that I seem to be gone, give me a little bit of time to reestablish the old star link. That's what we got planned. So I will drop and come back and tell you about the wonderful world of AI and some other little stories about technology that we've discussed that isn't artificial intelligence for a change. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. Let me tell you about, we've talked about quantum computers before. Fascinating subject. Very expensive, but it's not like AI, where everyone seems to have one. There's very few quantum computers. They cost millions of dollars. The primary expensive part tends to be the cryogenic facilities, because you have to get it very close to absolute zero, because quantum computers work on the basis of entangled quantum bits, qubits. There was a recent interesting paper, which I assume a lot of people working on quantum computers hopes is completely wrong. They discussed the possibility of reaching a quantum computer wall. The effectiveness of a quantum computer depends upon the stability of its qubits. They have to stay in entanglement, and you have to keep the noise down, otherwise the answer generated is just random gibberish. And also you have to grow the number of entangled quantum qubits. The paper suggests that there is a wall at about 1,000 qubits, after which the information stored in the superposition of these qubits kind of loses coherency and can't be increased, so it doesn't scale well, according to the Internet encryption, the RSA standard. Unfortunately, in order to break the RSA standard, it's been theorized that you're going to need at least 8,000 qubits in your quantum computer. So if the limit is 1,000 and the requirement means that they're not going to be able break RSA encryption, which is good for RSA encryption, but bad for the field of quantum computing. So it might be useful for other things, but it may not be terribly useful for decrypting RSA type of codes and such. So much for quantum computers. They're going to work on it some more. They're going to work on the theory. They're going to work on the quantum computers to see what happens if they get more than 1,000 qubits working, whether it's whether there's a problem or whether there's no wall. It's scalable. So if it's scalable, the guys working on quantum computers will be happy. If it's not scalable, they'll have to find another reason to research the field. Anyway, that's quantum computers. Let me drop for a second. Okay, let's go into good old AI. Stanford studies outline dangers of asking AI chatbots for personal advice. Always good advice is don't ask AI for advice. They're not conscious. They're not clever. They simply talk well. They speak well. They write well. And it kind of fools some people. And also they can copy all the information written down throughout the Internet, which is a pretty good source for both wisdom and foolishness. Try not to take advice from an artificial intelligence, you know, until maybe someday when the super intelligent, godlike AI comes into being that all these billionaires seem to want and think is going to happen any day now. Anyway, Elon Musk, the last of his XAI co-founders, quit XAI. So that's not a good sign. Elon apparently is just going to start from scratch because he built Grok the wrong. That's not great news either. Anthropic's Claude apparently is getting very popular. It seems to have gotten into the number one position, at least for popular AIs being used in the general public. It used to be OpenAI slot, but a bunch of things have happened to OpenAI that caused Anthropic to push ahead. So that's news. And, of course, the Anthropic won an injunction with the Defense Department so that they're not put on a list for the time being. They were threatened with being put on a list. And Wikipedia cracks down on AI articles. They're going to try their best to keep them out of Wikipedia. Also, good old Senator Bernie and AOC proposed a law freezing data center construction for the foreseeable future. So perhaps the tide has turned for data centers. Only time will tell. More than a few of them have seemed to have stalled. They've kind of run out of money. Some of them run out of material that they use to build, you know, the semiconductors and such. So the AI industry is still kind of not confusing at the very least. We will follow it for you as time progresses. It's going to have an effect on all of our lives, for good, bad, or indifferent. Anyway, that's my little short list of AI stories and the story about the quantum computer. If anyone has any responses, remarks, or questions about it, this would be a good time to hit your push-to-talk button and mention what question you might have on that subject.
KD2 TFJ net control.
Yeah.
I don't know if you did check in. I just got back in the house. I'm sorry. I just wanted to say I'm in. I don't have no comment on the AI thing right now.
Okay, very good. What very often happens is it gets brought up later on in the night, and, you know, we don't kind of lock it into this particular time, because I give a little short stories about these things. I think it's the best time to deal with it, but we may turn around on the subject and talk about it later tonight. Only time will tell. Anyway, let's move on to the main segment of our technical mess, the questions, topics and for discussion, what have you. If you have a question or a topic for discussion, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or not. And again,
November 2, Zulu Charlie, science related.
Okay, John, I got you down. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
W2BZ, non-amateur radio related.
Okay, Rich is down on the list. Anyone else want to put your name on the list for tonight?
Yeah, Wesley, did you got me on the list? After everybody. Ham radio related.
Anyone else want to put their names on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk.
Good evening, Warren. This is KD2UBU out of Florida. I just want to discuss something about ham radio recruitment. We've spoken about this before. Back to you.
Okay, we'll put you on the list. Anyone else out there want to put their names on the list for tonight? Okay, John, you're up first. What do you got for tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening, Ned. I've been seeing through the years now some pretty interesting videos, et cetera, that don't go into too much detail, but just of the capabilities of these new 3D printers. And I'm wondering, you know, if anybody, yourself or anybody else out there, you know, owns one or is knowledgeable about it, you know, what the what the maybe the downsides are, the upsides, you know, where they're at. Is it just a bunch of hype, or is it really something where if you need to make a specific, you know, instrument or tool or you know, object that you can kind of program one and make it? I mean, it sounds very appealing. So I'm just wondering if anyone out there has any knowledge or experience with them.
Okay. In the old days, I used to go to the Limar Campfest and show people my things that I printed in 3D. That you know, I had my my printer and all kinds of interesting. I had the walkie-talkie stands, knobs, all kinds of stuff, geometries, and a lot of those times I spent it off to the side of the stage right next to Andy WA2CDL, who had the checkout table. So for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and I figured that everyone probably had already seen it, and so I basically stopped doing it. But I'm on my second 3D printer. I have a very nice printer that's capable of printing five different filament colors on the same object. It has it basically is an additive device. It heats plastic filament and then deposits it on a level. It works on the XYZ planes, and it puts down the melted filament in the X and the Y plane, and it raises it a touch and does it again and again until it puts together a solid object. You know, there are some devices that are subtractive. You know, they have little drills and such, and they cut into the material that's subtractive. Also, there is, rather than using plastic filament that's melted, there's a technology where polymers are used that cure under ultraviolet light, and a glorified iPad is the UV source. So it draws a pattern in the screen, in the LCD screen, and emits the UV light that cures one, and then it goes to the next one and cures the following level and builds on that. So there's a lot to be said about 3D modeling and such. So, I mean, we could take about five or six of these technical nets and still not really go that far into it. The Achilles heel, unfortunately, is that you either have to be good at CAD/CAM, computer-aided design, because you need a 3D model for the 3D printer to follow. A lot of people take the easy approach, and a lot of people donate their plans in the open. You go to websites like Printable, and there's about five or six others, and you go through a search, and it shows you a bunch of models that people had already built and perfected. Or if you're a game and you have the measurements, CAD/CAM software, which is somewhat obtuse. You can theoretically write the design for something that you want to reproduce.
CAM2CC?
Yes, Brian.
Hi, Roy. How have you been? Hello to everyone out there. I know I haven't been active, but I've just been very, very busy, and I wanted to join in tonight. And I'll be on the side, and this year should be ready for me.
Okay, very good to hear from you, Brian. We missed you, but we're glad to have you back.
Well, thank you for the kind comments. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be back.
Okey-doke. So, John, he tried to give you a real short version of a very, very large subject. I'm more than willing to concentrate on any little aspects of it if you want me to.
No, Roy, you kind of got into something I was wondering about, was how user-friendly it was, and Yeah, I suspect that there might be some difficulties with the programming. Now, they're not going to understand that, you know. Just one last question on it. And it's just out of curiosity. I don't know. You needed a particular spacer with a crazy design on it. Let's just say an X design, quarter inch thick. And how economically do these 3D printers run? In other words, can you print? Let's just take that for instance. A spacer that you could buy in a hardware store from today's price probably cost you a quarter or 50 cents, where I remember they were pennies. But anyway, but it didn't fit your design that you needed. And so you had to make one yourself. How much would it cost you? And I know it could vary, but just so I get an idea here, I don't know if they would cost you $5 to print it or would actually be much less cheaper, like pennies. So I'm just curious about that aspect of it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the simplest approach is not to discuss the price of the actual 3D printer. I mean, either you have a 3D printer or you don't have a 3D printer. I don't think anyone's going to go out and buy a 3D printer specifically to make a spacer. 3D printers kind of come in all shapes, sizes, and values. They range from $100 to $150 cheap Chinese ones that might or might not burst into flame because of a lack of safety features, all the way to thousands of dollars. Now, a lot of people invest about, under $1,000 usually, but, you know, you can go crazy. So, but we won't kind of consider that because that's way too much. A pound of plastic filament used to cost about $15. With the economics, it now approximately costs $20. Whether it goes down again, I don't know. But it used to be about $15 for 1 pound. So kind of figure out how heavy a spacer is. I would be amazed if it would end up costing you in raw materials more than 20 cents.
Okay. Again, I just wanted to find out, get an idea of how expensive of a toy it would become. But that sounds very reasonable. All right, I'll do some more digging on my own, and thank you for the input. And enjoyed that, that talk in the beginning about the quantum computers. And thanks again for keeping us all updated. I'll turn it back over to the net. AC2GS, November 2, Zulu Charlie, on the side and listening.
Okay, very good. John, thank you once again for your participation in our lovely little technical mess. Rich, what do you got for us tonight? Rich, are you out there? I guess Rich has stepped away for a second. We'll give him a little time. We'll go to Wayne. Wayne, KD2UDU. You have a topic of enrolling amateur radio operators.
I do. We've spoken before about this, Roy, where you felt that the younger generation, the kids in school would be like a bad investment. It would be an investment for the future, but we wouldn't get activity right away. And I think you're correct in that assumption. I'm here in Florida. I'm in Newport Richey, Florida. So we have a club here, but we also took over a smaller club, and they had a meeting at the library, the Newport Richey Library. So we converted their meeting space to a smaller club meeting with the intent to, you go to a library for information. And I was originally targeting the youth. And we actually did a presentation in the library on a bunch of homeschooled children of various ages from 6 on up to 12 or 13. And I mean, they were enthusiastic, and the teachers and parents there were very enthusiastic and enjoyed the presentation. But we didn't get much in the way of participation in the club. They never came to any of our meetings, and to my knowledge, they haven't tried to take the test. But the library as a base for reaching out to the community has turned out to be better. They just actually called me last week saying, oh, you know, the brochures that you were here, they're all gone. Could you bring more brochures? And we've had not a huge stream of people, but a steady stream of people curious. Some of them are already hams and they wanted to join the club. Others are curious about ham radio and also GMRS, which my club down here is looking to embrace. I was trying to put up a GMRS repeater for the local area. So the library has turned out to be a better source rather than other things that the youth might, like the scouting and all that. They don't seem to materialize like you actually said. Anyway, KD2, back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're getting people interested. Yeah, I guess it depends on the locale. I have a lovely library that I spent a lot of my childhood in. And say most times when I pass by and look in the window, it's empty. So again, I guess thankfully Florida has a lot more respect for their libraries than people in Brooklyn do. So that's good to hear. Yeah, I mean, I think it's all well and good to try and get people, kids interested, just, you know. But in my experiences, I found most of them to be somewhat jaded. You'll find occasionally kids who are very excited by the subject. Sometimes it's connected to a relative, a beloved grandfather who used to work with the radios and such, and you know, those are few and far between, and usually most of these people, I've mentioned it before, I'll mention it again, you know, they discover girls or guys, and or they get accepted into college, and they are busy doing other things. I mean, unfortunately, we recently locally had some experience with Columbia University's club, and they didn't really they weren't interested. We offered them a space on our repeater for a net. They didn't show up for it. The person who arranged it was kind of embarrassed a little bit. It was unfortunate. Young people just have a lot of things that they find that they have to do. So most of the time, I found if you ask people about their hobby and where it started in childhood.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Okay, I hope I haven't timed out the, I don't think so. Anyway, so I'm glad to hear that you're getting some connection with the library. I think you're better off in the long run to appeal to a somewhat older audience. They've kind of stabilized their lives, and they could, if it's possible, they can spend more time and effort learning the hobby and playing around with the hobby.
Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Okay, I'm going to let the repeater rest for, you know, 10, 15 seconds just to make sure that everything got linked. Okay, this is AC2GS. So, Wayne, have you gotten any new members through that or just early interest?
Actually, Roy, no, we have gotten several new members. Not huge flocks of people, but, you know, a steady, slow stream of members. They take, you know, we do testing at our regular clubhouse,
And that leads to another problem, is trying to keep them active. So the repeaters are quiet. In fact, I just suggested... Roy, are you there? I'm sorry, I was disconnected.
Yeah, I hear you. You dropped out. Wayne, are you there? I think he dropped out of EchoLink again. We're giving Wayne a little bit more time. He fell out of EchoLink a couple of times, so I'm giving him some extra time to relink. We'll try to see if Wayne reestablishes his echo link. He hasn't seemed to be able to do it yet. Rich, W2BZ, we called your name and you didn't respond. Are you there? No, everyone's gone elsewhere. I tell you what, let's go to you, Wesley, but, you know, if Wayne or Rich pop back on EchoLink or elsewhere, we may pause and make you as a two-parter. How's that?
Good enough, no problem. So, since we do not have those gentlemen in, I'm going to start from new radio. I'll Nico DJ W70T. So, I sent you the email and it says that it has a AI noise cancellation. And it's like 20 seconds of watch time on that video. For me, it is like... something is, from the fashion words, something is popular, something is on the top. So they use AI anywhere that they want. And actually it's nothing more but if the noise around is louder than the voice of ham radio operator, then there would be no cancellation. But I would love to hear your opinion, too.
Yeah, I kind of feel that they're just overusing AI. Perhaps they have a digital signal processor chip, some cheap thing for the, you know, 50 cents or 60 cents, and they have a relatively simple algorithm for noise reduction, but I think they slapped AI because... you can always charge more for something that has AI in its name.
Okay. Output power, TFT, color LCD, display, AI-powered noise canceller, that's how they call it, semi duplex dual band V/U operation. Also, that would be VHF, UHF. So even though that you are transmitting, you can still hear UHF. Let's say you're transmitting on VHF, you can still hear UHF. What good is that? I don't know. But anyhow, they have it. IP67, waterproof. So, there was a conflicting information in the video. They say 3 feet, but then they change to 3 meters. 3 meters is 9 feet. So you can place that for half an hour, that radio, in the water 6 feet deep, and it's going to work. I wonder if it's going to work underwater. But anyhow, it should. So Vox, VOX, frequency counter. For me, it's a BS. Let me drop.
Wesley? Wesley? Wayne's back on EchoLink. Can we put this on hold for now?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Okay, Wayne, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, Roy. I was starting to say I suggested that we have a tech net to try and fill in some of the repeater times, because the repeaters are very quiet here, and we want to keep the new members occupied and not have it feel like a waste of time to become a member. I also suggested some of the other things that Weimark has on their system, computer net, the trivia net. So those things that from my past, I'm suggesting down here. We do have a higher rate of attrition because here in Florida, you know, people come to retire and unfortunately they pass away. So we've lost several members due to that. I think there in New York they have a younger set of participants. So that's another thing that we're struggling with, losing really good people. And that's all I have to say. Back to you, Roy.
Okay. Well, I think you did good things. You should take example from Weimark. A lot of guys with clever ideas. They, you know, they have the morning drive time net. Probably have an afternoon drive time net. And they've thrown a bunch of nets, onto the wall, and some of them stick and some of them don't, unfortunately. They had a scanner net. Unfortunately, I don't think it lasted a year. But they had astronomy net for many years. And, I think it's a good idea to borrow other people's successes. So the only way that you're going to get participation is make activities for people. Eventually, they might kind of coalesce into a little neighborhood with friends and with regular scheduled talks, and that's great to hear. But before you can run, you got to learn how to crawl and learn how to walk. So get people used to the idea of using their radios by giving them a bunch of reasons to use it, and then hopefully they'll figure out some new things for themselves personally. You got to engage them in the hobby. The worst thing is a ham that doesn't have a radio and has a bunch of good reasons why they don't have a radio and why they don't go on the radio. But ultimately, we have some club members who I don't think have been on the radio for at least 15 years. They make do with simulations or one kind or the other, but I don't think that makes for a healthy hobby. You're doing the right thing. If I was you, I'd consider events as stations. Find historic things that resonate with you, local to your area in Florida, and you can get a small 1x2 or a 2x1 call sign for a special event, and send out QSL. Type of way to motivate people into getting into the hobby. You know, field day is only once a year, or, you know, winter field day is probably much more doable in Florida than in New York, so that's twice a year, but, you know, a couple of special event occasions, and that's a few more times during the year where you get everyone out to play radio, which is probably the best approach of producing some local interest, you know. You set up in a public space, and eventually some people wander by and say, "What the hell are you doing?" And it gives you an opportunity to sell the hobby. So there's a lot of little things, but if you put them all together and you work hard on them, it might grow. And unfortunately, the problem, one of the many problems with our lovely hobby is the demographics are against us. You look at a convention for, say, comic books. And the demographics are completely different than an amateur radio convention. Unfortunately, far more people operating motorized wheelchairs in ham conventions than there are in comic book conventions. And we just have to live with that reality. You can kind of try to focus at younger people. We've tried real hard locally here in Brooklyn, and we've succeeded a reasonable degree. But it's a perpetual thing that you got to keep. Okay, it should have relinked. Yeah, fine. Okay, thank you, Wayne. And anytime, feel free to come back, and I'd love to hear how your plans to invigorate your local club are going.
All right, Roy, I'll tune in regularly.
Okay, no. Let me try Rich one more time. W2BZ, are you back?
Yep, I'm back.
Okay, what's your subject for tonight?
Well, it has to do with something I saw yesterday on YouTube, which was the launch of a starship and then it coming back into the Indian Ocean. I want to ask Paul, did that happen a while ago, or was I actually watching a live event last night?
No, that's old news, old news. Wow, I guess that's got to be, what, 4 or 5 months ago, I guess by now. Time is getting by. The next big one is coming up, and it's not going to be Starship. It's going to be the SLS. That'll be on Wednesday. That's the Space Launch System.
Well, whenever it was, I was amazed at the screamers for joy from, I guess, the employees of X, or whatever it's called. It deployed 6 Starlink satellites, and after each one left the spacecraft, the cheers were unbelievable, like the Beatles. It was like the Beatles, and I don't get it. We put a man on the moon more than a half a century ago. Why are they going nuts over a 10-minute flight? I just don't get it.
It could be because Elon is paying them all.
Yeah, probably. But it was like a rocket went off, came back to Earth, and that's the first time it ever happened. That's how crazy these screams of adulation were. I was laughing. So, but why are we not back on the moon already with a manned mission?
Well, Paul can tell you in detail, but basically we put our money on the wrong horse, and we're tolerating delay after delay after delay. This is not how NASA did the first moon mission by far. Otherwise, we'd still be waiting for it to happen. So either Elon's got to change his ways, or we got to find another manufacturer.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't want to forget it. I'm building a antenna launcher to get above my tree outside because the wire came down in the last snowstorm. And I've looked at like 20 builds of the launcher, to get the wire up into the tree and then pull it down, whatever. I asked a question the week before about that. But I'm getting all the parts tomorrow. If anybody's interested, I can point you to the YouTube that I saw. It's very simple to put this together. And I have a parts list also. It's great for POTA. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, very good. Maybe you should take some pictures of it and put it up on QRZ.
Yeah, I think I will do that. There was one thing that the guy who designed this launcher said that he only uses, you know, that white tape that plumbers use around threads. This guy said, I only use that when it's brass to brass or metal to metal. And I use another thing, I forgot what it was, that, what's the name of the, I'll think of it. And I just wondered if, you know, because you're shooting this thing up under pressure, and you don't want the thing to fly apart in your hand. But I'm wondering if metal to PVC, still using that white tape, would be good enough. Are you familiar with these types of fittings? Anybody out there?
Yeah, you're
welcome
talking
to the
about
Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club Repeater
line.
System.
Hey,
Note
hey.
Number 912 of the New England Reflector.
Link active.
Okay, let's see if I'm on. Anyway, that's the plumber's Teflon tape.
Right, but this guy said he only uses that when he's fitting two metal pieces together. You know, he wraps it around the threads. But if he's doing metal to PVC, he uses this other kind of sealant. And I really don't know why. If you don't think metal to PVC can be leak-free, I don't know, Roy. What's the difference between metal to PVC and metal to metal?
PVC is a softer material. It's less rigid. It doesn't hold form. It can be deformed. It can be scratched and scraped and all kinds. So there's a couple of orders of magnitude of the rigidity of metal couplers versus PVC.
Yeah, I'm so excited to get this launcher working, and I'm going through all this. There are about 15 parts that you need, you know, reducers, bushings, this and that, and I ordered it all from Home Depot. And I may only use it once. If the thing shoots up and over this tree outside, I'm going through all of this and expense. It comes out to about $70 in parts, but that's a lot cheaper than the $300, $400 that, you know, the retail companies are charging. So we'll see. Again, if anybody wants to watch a video of this guy putting together the launcher, it's a very simple, and he's great at explaining step by step what you have to do. Look me up on the QRZ. Shoot me an email, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
On that.
Yes, Brian.
Let me tell you what happened to NASA, and in a way, how it lost its way for something very simple. What should have been done for the ISS, and can still be done, okay, is to create a module that's rotating, which simulates centrifugal force, thereby giving you, in quotes, artificial gravity. Because without artificial gravity, even a fraction of what it might be on the moon or on Earth, you're not going to be able to go anywhere because of the deleterious effects of non-gravity. Coupled with radiation shielding, which must be provided, this is going around the moon and doing it this way. I mean, I personally don't get it. That's all.
Okay, I mean, the situation with low to no gravity for a moon landing is not a terrible thing, you know, that we have to do something about. Mars, certainly, but you know, we've been able to do moon missions without artificial gravity, and you can't really compactify those types of pseudo-gravity fields, you know, otherwise your vestibular operating devices will go screwy. You have to kind of lengthen out the axis of the rotation in order to get the benefits of gravity without causing other problems as well. But the primary problem, as I see it was a foolish idea to begin with, this particular chosen technology in which you have to refuel the moon mission with secondary fuel canisters that have to be that have to fill your primary vehicle repeatedly. In some cases, people have theorized that you're going to need 20 refills before you fill up the tank. And we haven't been able to do that once. We haven't tried, but we, you know, it's not going to be a simple procedure. So the entire idea of using this method guarantees nothing to happen, as far as I'm aware, for many, many years. So you either kind of change the method, you go back to the old way, or certainly, you know, fire Elon, because he'll have rockets blowing up for the next 20, 30 years.
Oh, by the way, Roy, your voice sounds different. Are you using a different rig or microphone, or is it something else?
Not using the same equipment. Sound mixing software, but that really shouldn't affect anything.
It doesn't sound as full-bodied as you had in the past. Just figured I'd just let you know that.
Okay, I'll look at my sound mixer, make sure that there's nothing special in line that I'm not aware of.
Okay, thanks. Right, bye.
Okay, no, nothing particularly that shouldn't be activated is activated. Anyway, so I wish you good luck, Rich, and please let us know how it goes.
Say that again, Roy.
I just wished you good luck and told you to let us know how it goes.
I certainly will. I'll send pictures of it, too. I have a parts list, and this video is even though there's about 20 parts or 15 parts, it's really an easy design. And every ham radio operator should have a way of getting wires into trees. But that's it for me tonight, Roy. Thanks, and I'll report back. W2BZ.
Okay, no, very good. Thank you, as always, for participating here. Wesley, let's get back to your handy talkie that doesn't impress me too much, that's kind of hyperboled out with saying that it's AI. I mean, it's a hundred and what? I think it's a $100 walkie-talkie. I mean, I don't think they could afford any really sophisticated artificial intelligence in that kind of inexpensive design. And, I mean, so you didn't leave it floating in the water? Why would you want to leave it floating in the water? I'm a little confused about it. I mean, you know, in case you need a handy talkie for your submarine or something.
I have a question for Rich, Roy. But I doubled with you.
Okay, let's hold this HD for a second. Paul, ask Rich.
Are you still there?
I am, yes.
Okay, no, this is in regard to the 40-meter problem that I had. By the way, Roy, Rich helped me many, many months ago trying to figure out why I wasn't getting 40 meters.
And we went through an elaborate procedure, and, you know, we traced everything down, and I still didn't find the exact answer until, like, during the middle of the blizzard. And I noticed my G5RB was completely disconnected from the PL259 connector. I mean, I checked everything. I put bypasses on, and I we went through all kinds of elaborate stuff, him and I. But it turned out that for some reason, that PL259 backed off. I think it had to do with, you know, the constant wind. And, you know, G5RB has that, you know, it's a ladder line, and it might have been twisted, and it must have loosened it up. And then over time, sure enough, it was waving. I connected that, and I was back in business, Rich.
That's great. When we were trying to get it to work, God, it must be 6 months ago now, were you not able to, after that, get on 40? Whoops, double city.
All of a sudden it wouldn't work again, and apparently that connector was working its way out, and it looked good to me, you know, and I checked everything else around it, and but sure enough, it's fine now. But yeah, I don't know where you went for months on end there, Rich, but I forgot to, I should have sent you an email, but anyway, I'll let you know now. Very good. Back to it.
Rich, is that it?
Come again?
I just want to make sure that you and Paul finished your exchange.
Yes, we did. We finished the exchange.
Thanks. Yeah, we lost you for a second there, Rich. Thanks again. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay.
Oh, can I make a comment, Roy?
Sure.
They're signing people up for the spring CW classes. So if anybody's interested in these classes, they're free. And they're given by CW Academy. And they're great. I'm taking the second advanced. I already did the advanced class. I'm going to take it again, because my head copying skills are really horrible compared to me writing in like a shorthand, writing down on paper. It makes copying CW for me much easier. And I don't know exactly the start dates, but just go to CWOps.com or .org, I'm not quite sure, and it'll point you to the classes. They fill up very quickly, so if anybody's interested, I would go to their website and sign up.
Okay, very good, Rich. Thank you. Okay, let's go back to you, Wesley, with the handy talkie. Again, you know, I'm sure it's a fine handy talkie. It's not a revolutionary handy talkie. It's one of those Chinese ones, but you know, relatively higher quality than Baofengs and such. But you know, you showed me a YouTube where is promoting it. I'd be confused if the distributor for anything wasn't promoting the stuff that they get paid to distribute. So that doesn't really earn anything.
Enter the queue. Not for the queue. Let me know if my voice is not too short.
Yeah, you sound almost like you're whispering.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me make it louder.
Okay. How about now? 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, it's significantly louder. It's fine. There's a background hum, but we can live with it.